You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 75, Quest for Camelot. Draw that axe in a chicken suit. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is your source for audiobooks that you can download or stream. And if you go to rotoscopers.com/audible, you can get your very own free trial for Audible. Recently, I've been, pouring through Ed Catmull's book, Creativity Incorporated. That's just my recommendation right now. But really, you can get a ton of choices at this great site. rotoscopers.com/audible is your place to start your free trial.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, Warner Brothers, and everything in between. My name is Chelsea Robson. I am here with my amazing co-hosts, Morgan Stradling and Mason Smith, and we are here to talk everything about animation. Everybody say yay!
Yay! Yay!
For anybody who is new to the podcast, basically we're just a bunch of friends. We get together every other week and we talk about a fantastic animated movie, or maybe sometimes not so fantastic. You know, it just depends. But right now we are in a Dinos and Dragons series, and we're at the tail end, and we are going to be...
Oh, I see what you did there.
Nice.
I like it.
Sorry.
Today we are going to be talking about Quest for Camelot. So...
Who?
A.K.A. that one time Warner Brothers tried to make a Zelda movie.
Oh, guys, don't get me started on the Zelda animated movie that needs to happen. Or live action. Just any movie.
Didn't they already make a Zelda live budget. Action then?
No.
Oh, no, that was just that one random YouTube video I saw.
Yeah, that was IGN on April Fool's Day.
Awesome.
But I'm actually excited to talk about this movie. I had never seen it before, even though I thought I had seen this with Chelsea at her sister's house, random memory, which was not true. But it was actually interesting, and I'm really excited to talk about it because this movie had so much potential to be good, but it just kind of really fell flat.
Wait a second. Totally. I thought I remembered seeing it with you at my sister's house, too.
Okay, then this really did happen, and I must not have paid attention because when I was watching the movie, I didn't remember a single plot point. So I was like, this didn't happen because I don't remember any of this movie.
No, wouldn't you call that a bad sign?
I know. Yeah, anyway.
My subconscious just pushed it away.
Well, push it away. Hey, this was the first time I had seen the whole thing. I remember seeing the previews, and this was in 1998, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so timing-wise, there were more interesting films I wanted to see, you know, as like a 10, 11-year-old. But I remember right off the bat not being interested in seeing this movie. I thought it was when I clicked play this morning to watch it, I thought this was the one where there's like a princess and a goblin, and the goblin wants to like flood the castle. But apparently it's not.
I wouldn't even know what movie you're referring to. So
isn't there a movie called The Princess and the Goblin? I'm pretty sure I saw it in theaters.
The only movie that comes to mind as you say that is the Black Cauldron.
No, it's not that one.
There is a movie called The Princess and the Goblin.
Okay, that's the one I saw. This one is totally different.
Okay. It's a 1991 European animated fantasy film.
Oh. Well, this one's a... Yeah, I guess so.
Wait.
When we're doing our Goblin series. Yeah, so the first thing when I did my research for this film was I saw that it was heavily promoted by Wendy's. Yep.
I remember that.
Pretty much sets the tone for this episode.
You couldn't get McDonald's. You couldn't get BK. Wendy's.
You had to go to Wendy's to
or
get
Pizza
your,
Hut.
Yeah, not even Pizza Hut.
Not even Pizza Hut would take these guys.
At least it's better than, like, Taco Bell or something.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Try to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
All right, let's take a look at the trailer.
Journey back to a land filled with mystery and magic, a time of bravery and adventure. Next summer, Warner Brothers Family Entertainment presents Quest for Camelot.
Attack!
It's taken Excalibur!
Where is the soul?
In a place of untold danger.
We're not going in there, are we?
The story of a girl who dreams of becoming a knight.
Fly on my father's wings to places I have never been.
A brave hero who will join her.
Excalibur is missing.
We're going after it.
A magical dragon with two points of view.
I'm Devon, and this growth on my neck is Cornwall.
Oh, what I could be if there was only me. Oh, what I'd do if I didn't have you.
And the evil knight.
You are going to lead me to Excalibur.
Who will stop at nothing to destroy all that is good and just.
Next stop, Camelot!
Featuring songs by Academy Award winner Carol Bayer-Sager and Grammy winner David Foster. Share the adventure.
Excalibur only belongs in the hands of Arthur.
Of the noblest legend of all time.
Seize them.
Reaching for the sky, I stand alone.
Mayday! Mayday!
Turbulence!
Camelot.
Quest for Camelot.
When we get to Camelot, we'll be kissed by the world's most beautiful women.
Right. We'll have to beat them off with a stick.
Quest for Camelot.
Wow, that was great.
You know, like I said, I remember
tell
this
you what, wow.
I remember this movie, but I remember I specifically sought out to watch this. I remember that being my plan. Like, I wanted to watch this movie. And I remember being at my sister's house, and I vaguely remember Morgan being there. And yeah, the only thing I remember afterward was the fact that it had the song The Prayer in it. And that is the only plot. It's not even a plot point, but that's the only point of the movie that I remembered from then to now.
Huh.
See, I remembered the music more from this movie, maybe because it actually played on the radio. Mm-hmm. But I remember the music definitely rang a bell, but the actual plot, nothing. The only thing I remember about this movie and being really turned off was the movie poster, or, you know, what ended up being the DVD cover. It's the guy and the girl, the two-headed dragon, and then this weird, you know, axe bird. And then you,
they put him on the cover.
At it, yeah, you just look at it and you're like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing appealing about it. And so I think that's why I'd avoided it for all these years, is because of that darn cover.
They didn't get John Alvin on there. I just watched Mason's video about John Alvin as his book review. Check it out. YouTube.
Oh, yeah. 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 John Alvin was cool. So this was 1998. And looking at all the other films that were released this year, I can see why I didn't see it, because this was the same year as A Bug's Life, Prince of Egypt, Mulan, Ants, you know, the other Bug's Life. And, you know, Lion King 2 and the Rugrats movie, which I saw in theaters, and I'm proud to say that I did. I mean, it was a tough time, and it was kind of already in the, like, blossoming time of the CG animated film.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of points that I'm going to talk about later about why this film just was kind of doomed. But that could be one of it. It had a lot of competition. I don't know. It didn't have nearly as many animated films, big ones, as, like, 2000 or something like that. Well, what was weird is that I was watching this and it was like, I was like, this is 1998, but it feels like it's trying to be like 1995 or four, or like sometime during the Disney Renaissance. That's what I felt like they were trying to make.
Yeah, a couple years too late.
Yeah.
That's how it works out. They missed the curve. I mean, it's not like it was totally ignored, though. I mean, the Prayer, which is in it, won so many awards. It won the Golden Globe Award for Best Original Song, and then it was also nominated for Academy Award for Best Original Song and a Grammy and for Best Pop Collaboration and Vocals. Like, it was a big deal that. It did get a lot of showcase because of that song. It was originally sung by Celine Dion and Andrea Bocelli. Which, did you know that Andrea Bocelli is blind? I just found this out like 2 years ago. Like, not long ago. And I was like, what? I don't know.
Did you know that Andrea Bocelli is a guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did.
Took me a while. So,
with a voice like that.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was brought up in story development or whatever, but I thought that was kind of cool that, you know, he was blind and the main character in this one was blind too. But
I had no idea.
I just made that connection right now. Anyway.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We are
the Real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg, and who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the Real Brady Bros.
So yeah. I have some general info about this movie.
Okay.
It was released May 15th, 1998. Runtime, 86 minutes, which I think it was less than that. I think it has a really long credits, and so it's not really 86 minutes because I was really happy when it was over. budget $40 million, but it only made $22.5 million domestically, which is a bit of a shame.
Ouch.
Definitely. And it was produced, we had kind of talked about this, by Warner Brothers Feature Entertainment. And they've done various things over the years, and their name has changed various times. Today it's called Warner Animation Group.
Everything's a group with them, though, like Warner Music Group, everything.
So this was the third film that they had actually done. The first one was Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. Next up, in 1996, 2 years before Quest for Camelot came out, was Space Jam.
Hello!
Probably one of their biggest ones. It was their biggest to date until the Lego movie came out this year. Other movies they had done... The Iron Giant, which we will not talk about, the sham that they did for that movie, Osmosis Jones, and Looney Tunes Back in Action. So those are kind of the movies that they've done. And recently, I think because of Lego Movie, there's a resurgent in Warner Animation, or now known as the Warner Animation Group. They have quite a few movies coming out in the 2015, 2016, 2017. Storks, Smallfoot, Lego Ninjago, and then, of course,
That's been going
Lego
on
Movie 2. And future other Lego movies. So, unfortunately, in the 90s, not so successful other than Space Jam. Which is interesting because Warner Brothers, if you think back, were, you know, in its origins with Looney Tunes and, you know, the classic characters that they have, they could have been positioned to be a Disney where, you know, if they would have played their cards right, maybe they could have had 54 animated theatrical films, but they don't. And it's just because they chose to go a little different route. But I'm actually excited for Warner and what they're doing in the future because it's an iconic studio. And, yeah, Lego Movie was great.
So what did you guys think about the animation in this movie?
The animation. You know, it looks good in some scenes. Let's talk about lighting or, like, shading. quote unquote, or like how the sense of like how light falls on the characters. Did you notice that it was like really dramatic and well rendered in some scenes, but in other scenes it wasn't?
Yes.
I just felt like some scenes just weren't finished looking and others were like really refined.
Yeah. I felt like at parts it felt blurry, and it wasn't blurry, but I just felt like
the lighting, how it
like
felt.
The lighting and shading that the characters just didn't seem to be to stand out. It just sort of, you know, their features kind of fell into their face and they fell into the background, but maybe that was just me.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. But I noticed that Disney did it. If you look at Aladdin, there's some like really dramatic lighting, and then in other scenes, it's just kind of like a flat cell, you know?
I can't explain what is different about this movie and the way that it's animated, designs, you know, colors, lighting, but it just is. You watch it and you're like, this is different. I don't know if it's low budget or if it's just a different style.
Well, it does kind of have the same style that, you know, the Iron Giant had. I mean, as far as how it looks.
Hmm.
That's what struck me. I was like, yeah, that kind of feels like that same tone.
Mm-hmm.
I really do like the girls in this. I thought they were very pretty.
I thought they were kind of generic looking.
Really?
I don't know. They had a unique look.
Yeah.
Whether it's generic or not. They just had a different, you know, the way their eyes and their faces were designed. I felt that Garrett looked exactly like the prince from Swan Princess.
Yes.
It's the big mouth. Yeah. I just kind of his movements and mannerisms. I'm like, are you a brother?
I had that same thing, especially with the villain. I felt like he was a very Rothbard type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just did.
Oh, Ruber. There's some CG effects also, you know, like architecture and some of the stuff. It worked in some scenes, but it didn't work in others. Kind of like the ogre thing, the giant rock dude thingy.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all.
I couldn't stand how they animated him.
I was like, why is he even there?
There's no excuse. If they can do really well with Toy Story, then they can match that quality on a simple dude like that.
No, but like, just as far as, I just felt like he wasn't even necessary. Why must he even be there? I don't even know.
We'll talk about that one.
That's like the question of the episode.
I know.
Why is that there?
It's true.
Why do we even have that character?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the UK, this movie is actually known as The Magic Sword, Quest for Camelot. Uh-huh. And the reason for this is because it is yet another Sword in the Stone film.
Aha!
Yeah, there's been quite a few of these. I think the most obvious is The Sword in the Stone by Disney. Quite a few live action adaptations, but it's just kind of taking a very famous, you know, sort of mythology or folklore and going with it. And so we get to see King Arthur and their interpretation of him. But this one I really liked that we get to see a little bit more about Excalibur, the city of Camelot, and then the Knights of the Round Table. I think that was probably my favorite, was kind of how these knights were key.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know. Where were they during this whole conflict with the bad guy? Weren't they supposed to go looking for the sword?
They're looking in the wrong spot.
Okay.
You know what? Okay.
The blind guy found it.
The blind guy found it. Here's my question. Merlin, what the heck was he doing this whole time?
He was like, he showed up one time just kind of in the background, and then at the end he has some type of a little like something to say. I'm like, dude, Merlin's beard, where have you been?
Merlin in your movie and you don't take advantage of it. I feel like he should have been played up a bit more. Him and Arthur, I would have liked to have seen more interactions and scenes with them, and then maybe they could cross paths with the main characters and
maybe
Kaylee.
A song between the two of them.
Absolutely. A love ballad. Why not?
Anyway, but oh, he had like, go ahead.
He had such a cool design, and so when he was on stage, he stood out, and then we just don't see much of him.
Yeah, Merlin was absolutely useless. Why did they even have him? Just to say that they had Merlin in their film? Like, if you're not going to have Sir Lancelot, who's the most famous knight of the Round Table, then why are you going to have Merlin and have him not do anything?
I think because they tried to say, oh, this is a story based on, you know, this famous folklore, but we don't want to focus on that. We're telling our own story.
Meh.
And I would have liked a little bit more of the original story and a little bit more play on those original characters intertwined with new characters.
Yeah.
And cut the dragons.
Yes, please. And the
dragon.
Chicken guy.
His dad, dragon.
Chicken X.
The chicken guy.
It's the chicken axe.
I despise that chicken. Draw that axe in a chicken suit.
I was a fan of the Celtic tune they had at the very beginning, though.
Ooh.
Tune. I mean, I'm always a fan of a good jig, so that was nice.
Yeah, yeah. So what about the singing? Do you guys feel like it worked as a musical?
No.
Or whatever it was trying to be?
No, it did not.
Like, everyone but the axe chicken had a song.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, they were all supposed to be singles, and they were all supposed to be a single song that they just crammed into a story and make it fit. Like, I was just like, oh, it's so annoying.
And you hit the nail right on the head. Make it fit. That's exactly what those executives were saying.
Yes.
Yeah, this story is, you know, the telltale example of what happens when executives who have no idea about the process and don't really care. They've just seen the success of other studios and they meddle in and they get their hands in this and as a result ruin the film. I mean, there's no proof that this exactly happened, but I feel with the music, someone up top said, you know, Disney does musicals. Musicals are hot right now. Musicals sell. You gotta have music. And so they're like, okay, but, oh, and you gotta have it be a single. Like, it has to be an R&B pop ballad at the credits that also we can sell singles and CDs. And it just wasn't good.
This is my R&B pop rant. Can I go on this right now at the
rant
beginning?
Rant on.
But you have to do it in an R&B song.
Right. Well,
cue the R&B beat.
The reason that these versions, there's a reason that they're kept at the end credits. Like, the problem I had with a lot of these songs is that they just put them in the middle of the song. And it's like, they didn't work with the acting. They didn't work with any of the, it's like they had this feigned emotion that they're trying to put in there. Like, and I'm just like, oh, I can't. I'm so bugged at this right now. And like, the problem is they wanted, I felt like they knew that the prayer was going to be huge and they wanted to make it fit. Honestly, I don't think they should have kept that song in this movie, or they should have made an entirely different movie to go along with this song. That was what was going to be the driving force. And they're like, well, just throw it in there somehow. And yeah. I just felt like that song has so much more potential than what they had for it. And it didn't work for me. And I was very upset with it.
Yeah, you know, she has her song, you know, Fly on My Father's Wings. That's from the very beginning. It's like, oh, you're forcing it, and this is not working.
And then, notice how the song takes an entire day. She finishes with the song, and her mom comes out in the evening. She's like, all right, are you done with your musical interlude? It's time to wash your hands. It's like this surreal, like, it's like a forced imitation of what Disney accomplished in the Renaissance. But they fail at their own formula because it's a Hollywood studio that the executives got in and they had to make everything work. I mean, like Morgan said, there's no evidence, but you don't have to be Benedict Cumberbatch to deduce that was what happened.
Well, every song stopped the progression of the story. And it was, I feel like either do a musical properly or just throw it onto the background, like Tarzan or something. I mean, Tarzan did it really, really well. And I feel like they should have just done it something like that.
Well, we've heard before that, you know, when you have characters and they're singing, the reason they're singing is because they're so full of emotion that words can't express it.
Right.
And like the initial song where she's singing Fly on My Father's Wings, we didn't need her to sing that to us. We already knew through that great scene. Like, I was actually really surprised with that opening scene with her dad. And, you know, how she wanted to be a knight. And I really connected with her dad and was really, really sad when her dad died. I felt the emotion there.
Yeah.
I understand that she wanted to live, you know, have her dad's legacy. He was important to her. She wanted to make him proud. I didn't need that in song.
Or they could have put it, like, toward the end of the movie to, like, kind of go back to that thought process. Mm-hmm. Or bring you back to that moment. But I just, it did not work. They were just kind of like, just throw it in there. Just throw it in there. And that's what bothered me.
Yeah.
A lot. I think they could have kept with the Celtic vibe, though. Like, if they would have kept that going throughout the whole thing, you know, not so much like Brave, like as in like totally Celtic the whole thing, but at least keep it within that same vein, it would have been cool.
Yeah, the score was nice.
Mm-hmm.
I like,
and like
what
Morgan
I
said, the emotional fervor in the first couple of songs, you know, like when the knights get around the table and they're like, oh, liberty, justice, and the American way. I mean, truth, freedom, peace, honor.
Valor.
There's like the fat knight who's like, food. You know, trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. The knights of the Boy Scouts. Anyway. Did you notice how many times they broke the fourth wall in how tedious the songs were?
Mm-hmm.
Ruber comes in and he's like, charming sing-along, but are we going to get this meeting going or
exactly,
what?
Exactly.
That's when I started to like Ruber, and that was like the 5 seconds when I actually respected him.
See, that reminded me of a movie that I just watched because I just did a review. Mickey, Donald, Goofy, The Three Musketeers. In that movie, and this is a really weird comparison, but just go with me. Okay, so in that movie, it's also a musical. Now, this movie is a little, you know, lesser in content. It's a direct-to-video film from 2004, and they have this singing minstrel turtle. And whenever he goes into a song, you know, like, oh, this is a perfect time for a song. Like, Mickey and Minnie have just met. It'd be perfect for a love song. And instead of just going into the love song, the turtle introduces it in such a way that you know they're making fun of the fact that he's singing a really ridiculous love song right now. And it worked in this movie, in the Musketeers movie, perfectly, because you're like, ah, they're making fun of themselves. But in this movie, like with that charming sing-along line, it's like they're making fun of themselves and they're acknowledging that they have this, you know, these songs here that, you know, are just a sing-along, right? But at the same time, it doesn't work because they're trying to be serious whenever they're singing.
And they're clinging so desperately to the formula of having these songs, but they don't even get the formula right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so enter Ruber, who's cool, who's basically Ganondorf animated.
Yeah. I came up with a list of ways to tell a bad guy. You know, we always talk about the big schnoz, but
there's
this
no
is
big schnoz on the guy.
But he does have scary nails.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible.
A significantly different hair color or style than everyone else. I mean, everyone else is pretty normal and they don't stand out, but he has the flaming red hair. Usually more tall and hulking than everybody else, or on the opposite, they're skinny, slender, and slimy.
Yes.
And potentially eyeliner.
The eyeliner is key. Scar had it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Shun, you had it.
Green Day has it.
Shun Yu is one of the best animated villains ever, and he wore eyeliner.
Telling him, he's big and hulking.
Yeah. Scary beyond all reason? Oh, yeah, that was him.
How about the green seance smoke?
Mm-hmm. Oh, green smoke is key. Which brings me to my next point. Who's the worst bad guy, Ruber or Rasputin?
Like, worse as in actually
as
a
dumbest.
Horrible pathetic.
As in totally pathetic? Or?
Here's my problem. Ruber has absolutely no motivation behind what he does besides, hey, I'm the bad guy. I'm going to sing this bad guy song about how bad I am because this is what I do. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I get that he's selfish. You know, he totally rejected Arthur's plan for a needs-based wealth distribution. I would too. But he, besides that, his main message is like, well, I'm insane. I'm the bad guy because I'm insane and I do bad things to the kingdom. You know,
with
and
weapons.
He has this cheesy, everything will be mine. The only redeeming quality about him is that Gary Goldman does his voice.
Gary Goldman. Not Gary Goldman. Gary Oldman.
I was like, what? I did not know this.
All right, rewind. The only redeeming quality about this guy is that Gary Oldman does his voice.
That is true.
The surprisingly catchy villain song, though. It's kind of got a rap beat to it. He's kind of hip-hop about it.
Which is another reason this music does not work. It's all over the place.
It is.
Oh,
and there's the love ballad, you know, the really, like, I want song. There's the really goofy, goofy dragon song, which is all pop culture references all over the place. There's his, you know, like, show tune number of his villain song. And then there's other songs where it's very musical theater, where it's like we're talking / singing and progressing the plot.
You know,
it's all
great?
Over.
You know what's great is that King Arthur is voiced by Pierce Brosnan. The name's Bond. King Arthur Bond. And, awesome. His singing voice is Steve Perry from Journey.
Oh.
Think of all the fun they could have had with that. But no one noticed that it was Steve Perry because King Arthur sang for like 2 seconds.
They paid a lot of money for those 2 seconds. I'm just going to throw it out there.
A questing.
If you're going to be paying so much money for a voice actor, it's just not a very, very good return on investment. That's all I'm saying.
No kidding. Y'all didn't know it was Steve Perry until I told you.
I didn't.
Not most of our listeners will. That roundtable meeting escalated really quickly. Ruber was like, hey, I want more because I, yeah. And you know what? I think we need a new king. And you know what? I'm going to kill you now. And he had a lot of pent up anger. And man, this is that one straw that broke the camel's back.
It's true.
They're like, oh, great, Ruber's here. He's the most high-strung, jerk-faced knight. Who knighted him?
That would be an interesting backstory.
Right. What turned him bad?
I don't know. Well, he's a little crazy, you know, that eye twitch of his.
Yeah, that just bugged me, though. Like, throughout the entire movie, it had it. And I was like, okay, I don't want to look at you.
Well, you never know whether he's a psycho, a crazy psychopath or, an evil mastermind. Like, he's no Shun Yu, who I consider to be the bane of Disney villains, but it's so hard to tell what Ruber is. I mean, at least Ganondorf had a clear vision.
Okay, so then we are introduced to Kaylee again. And so my question is, do you like her as the lead or heroine? Did you believe her, motivations, who she was, how she behaved?
No.
What is she? Some kind of wannabe Belle? Like, that's what she looks like. Her character design.
Except for she wants to fight. So she's a Belle meets Mulan.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Mulan didn't want to fight. She has a higher motivation. She doesn't want to be a hero. She just wants to protect her family.
But that is
a Mulanism, yeah. I thought I got a little Brave.
I got mostly Brave in there.
I got some Brave in there.
Before Brave was.
They obviously Pixar.
The characteristics of Merida. I don't want to wear a dress. I want to save Excalibur. What? It's like, okay. Yeah, and there's even that same, scene as in Brave where she's putting on the underdress to get ready and like, man, there's...
It'll be questions
did we watch this
for
movie?
My own hand. Yeah, how dare WB rip off such an original idea as Brave? How dare they? Jerks.
Before their time.
They even had a tapestry like Brave. I mean, these are very key, iconic parts of, Scottish culture, but it was just really surprised when they looked to the family tapestry, and I'm like, wow, I'm surprised here to see the exact same elements.
I know that she wanted to, save the kingdom and be a knight and save her mom, kind of. I mean, she seemed moderately concerned about her mother. Whatever, inner struggle the writers were going for with Kaylee, what was her name?
Kaylee.
Got lost in how annoying and oblivious she is. She's and just like going through the forest.
La 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 la. Don't even notice how the forest wants to kill me. Blind guy has to save me.
Well, another problem with her is she's so focused on being a knight and fighting and I'm a tomboy. Ha ha. And then she goes and I'm going to save Excalibur. And then boy, hi. Like she just does this 180 in a way where she's just kind of into him. And I know she's... She should like boys, whatever, but it made her a lot more soft, which is fine.
She's just young.
How old is she supposed to be?
I don't know, but she's shorter than her mom, and I feel like you should at least be your mom's height.
Her mom's pretty young looking.
Yeah. I mean, she's probably 15.
Yeah, but
that's my guess. I don't know.
Well.
And I didn't look into this, but she's wearing basically leggings and a little tunic. Uh-huh. I'm like, that is not appropriate for a woman in, the 1200s.
That would never fly at BYU Idaho. Yeah. She kind of dresses like
maybe that was, but I'm pretty sure women just wore skirts and dresses back then.
Wow. Who knows? Who knows?
Anyway.
The only thing we do know is that there is a trumpet sound for whenever Excalibur happens to be stolen because they sound the trumpet and
everyone knows.
Jethro out in the potato fields is like, Excalibur's been stolen. Gee willikers.
This happens on a weekly basis.
The 14th time this week. Yeah, stolen by the griffin commanded by Ganondorf. Like, now all of Hyrule knows you're here.
Yeah.
Even his henchmen look like Huns, before they turn into... mechanical monstrosities. That sing and dance, that just got too weird.
What part?
Sorry, I'm just flying through this, but
yeah.
The fact that he has this vial that he got, that would be a better backstory than this.
The Acme Potion.
The Acme Potion. Like, WB can't even get over themselves for one second.
Well,
to give us something.
Does it actually say Acme on it?
Yes.
Oh my God.
And I was a bit disturbed because I don't know. I felt it really took, it took me out of the moment.
Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. So he throws it in the pit and he starts shoving people in and he's like, look, I will make you into, what are you guys anyway? You know, they're like weapon guys.
Yeah.
The character designers are like, okay, think of if an axe could walk, draw that. Okay, okay. You know?
I have no idea why anyone would want to turn into one of these things. I feel like opposable thumbs are actually more helpful than a weapon as arms.
So, you, higher mammal.
Just because you get taller and then you kind of have permanent weapons on you, I don't think that makes you a better fighter or more used to him. I think they would have been better as humans with whatever weapons they want to use.
So practical. That reminds me of Madagascar 2 when he's like, you, higher mammal, we could use your opposable thumbs and cerebral cortexes. Or they could use them as farming or in construction equipment, you know, turn those swords into plows, man. And then we get introduced to the chicken axe thing, which just got on my nerves so quickly.
Well, because they have this chicken who we're sort of introduced to at the beginning, and this chicken is different than the other chickens because it's more cartoony. So you're like, all right, what's this all about? And then you realize what the payoff is. Oh, it's some cheesy plot device.
Yeah, there's this
chicken axe.
Right. There's this tiny little subplot that you really have to scrutinize the movie to catch. You know, he's trying to find love, and the only chicken that respects him and loves him is, you know, the big chicken lady. Let's just say that. And you know, whatever. And then he turns into chicken axe thing, and he's just so bumbling and pathetic. You know, he does kind of do some heroic things, but he has no clear conscience. At one point, he's totally giving a report to Ruber about the whereabouts of our heroes. The next moment, he's freeing Kaylee from being tied up. But the point that he was this like semi trying to be a lovable side character. Like, did WB think that their movie was so complicated that they needed a totally stupid character for the audience to laugh at and be entertained that way?
I felt like the whole movie was filled with those. So, oh, I don't know. I think maybe they were thinking about the toys. Because, like, we could really make an awesome Wendy's children's toy out of this.
Yeah, just think of it. It's like a chicken, but an axe. And then Del Toro did it in Pacific Rim, but he made a giant one. I don't know. I hate to be so negative, but, like, there's so many crazy, goofy things that just don't make sense here. Yeah.
No, and I hate being so negative, too, because it's like, the thing is, there was so much potential that this movie had.
Yeah.
I felt like going into it, as Morgan mentioned earlier, that first scene, it was really, I felt like I was getting to know the characters. I could see the plight that they were in, you know, the little bit of angst in the family circle there. And then it just kind of like went away. And even there were like some really good main characters. For example, I did like Kaylee, but I felt like her voice actress wasn't very emotive. I felt like she wasn't very engaging. And the same with Garrett. I felt like, I mean, it's the guy from Princess Bride. And I'm like, ah, yes, the Dread Pirate Roberts is here. He was just too straight. His voice, there was no emotion in it. And I just felt like they could have changed those voices and they would have like fixed it. But I liked those characters. I felt like the story that, yeah, you know, you had a really strong female and then, or at least a growing female. And the male protagonist is blind, and, you know, so you have obvious trials that they're going through. Like, these are not very hard to create a story around, and they could have done a really good job with it. And I think that's one of the main reasons I was so, like, bugged about this movie, because it was like, it could have been so good. You could have been a contender.
Okay, well, they do have this going for them. They do have a strong female protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's cool. That's different. That's fresh.
It's like a stereotypical.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
I mean, by the mid-90s, we'd had Jasmine, we'd had Pocahontas, we'd had Esmeralda. It kind of became the norm.
Right.
We had Megara. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the norm that you had this, like, sassy, independent. And as a result, it's no longer interesting. It's no longer anything that is new or exciting. It's okay. Yeah. She's a girl. So since she's a girl in a movie nowadays, she has to be feisty and independent and have ideas and think.
All right. All right. Yeah.
Just kidding.
Sense.
Not saying she shouldn't have ideas and think, but
they didn't even push that. The mom was just like, oh, well, you know, you should really just try on this dress and not try to be here. You know, there was no, like, you are a peasant, you're always going to be a peasant, and when you die, I'm making you a nun. You know, there wasn't anything like that.
But, Daddy, I want to go to the ball.
That's an old Mason comedy shtick. But anyway, you know, one thing's for sure is that Kaylee is apparently the only hope for the entire kingdom, because she's, like, the only person who's out a-questing for Excalibur.
You're our only hope.
You're our only hope. Like, Star Wars much? Come on.
I am a Jedi Knight, like my father before me. Anyway. And then Ruben's like, so be it, Jedi. Armed and fully operational.
Great. You know, that's cool. They could have, like, put some more Star Wars type allusions.
Ripped off
in
Star Wars?
Well, they got C-3PO and R2-D2, but they're dragons.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh my gosh. I love how she's like, you know, fly, Kaylee. You're the only hope for Camelot. And then she runs away, and then mom starts a sad, sappy song, like, while she's being led away by the brutes. You know, I half expected them to sing along with her. And it ruins it. It's a tender song, but...
battle.
The thundering herd, we feel a lot like cattle. Yeah, they loved him as his mother. A mechanical army worth fighting for. Wish that I had. Anyway, so she's singing this sad, sappy song, and it totally gets ruined because they're playing it over this horrific chase sequence. It's like this tender, tender, loving song while, you know, metal brute dudes are Raiders fans are trying to kill Kaylee and chase her down, you know. Good thing she meets Link. I mean, Garrett.
I do like Garrett.
I
thought
him.
He was one of the more, he dresses. The most interesting. He is a Link, huh? The blind.
Minus the hat and the bow staff, he is Link, but blind. But hey, he's got a bird minion who's not evil. That is that is a huge accomplishment in this film. The hawk is the only competent character in the whole film.
It's true.
Probably why he went and joined Shun Yu.
He's just the immortal bird.
Yeah, well, he got a lot of acting gigs in 1998. Yeah. Pretty versatile. He can play the good hawk and the bad hawk.
Put that on my resume.
Yeah. So interesting. Why do you think they wrote his character as blind?
I don't know.
Have a song called You Are My Eyes?
Maybe. No, that's probably what it was. They, like, went through the catalog of songs that they needed to, that they could have gone through, and they're like, yeah, let's throw that into the mix. And, you know, Andre Bocelli works it, so hey.
Well, we do know that executives did play a part in ruining this film. That reading, you know, researching this film, at one point the initial draft was actually supposed to be quite interesting and actually legitimate and something that you want to see, but it got changed around and whatever. And I think Garrett always was a blind character, because when you hear, and just kind of as we're talking about, it's interesting. It's something new. It's something different. And so, I feel that was kind of always there in this is just my own assumption. I don't know, but I feel like at one point he was always there and he was always blind, and you see bits and pieces of this and how it could really develop into something really cool and exciting, but it gets taken away because of the goofiness, the silliness of the film. We don't really get a focus on that aspect at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. But he's a pretty stand-up guy. I kind of liked him. He plays, at first, he plays the foil to Kaylee. He doesn't really want much to do with her.
Thank you. For what? For reminding me why I'm a hermit.
Oh. Burn! Burn!
Like, oh, okay, see you later.
Yeah.
And then he has a song.
Yeah. Brian White is his singing voice, and I was looking him up, and he's kind of been around for a while, but nothing special. I mean, so I want to ask you, Chelsea, because he seems to be a country singer. So on a scale of bar singer to George Strait, how big is this guy?
All hail King George.
George, exactly.
You know, believe it or not, in 1996, I was not into country music at all.
And
I
Whoa. I know.
I think
far out, man.
Well, I think it was just because everybody at school expected me to be listening to country music. And, you know, just because of that, I made it a point not to.
I was being the rebel that you always were.
I am totally rebellious in that way. So I totally missed when this guy was big. But apparently he was pretty big. Looking at what he's done, I mean, he's done quite a bit. I mean, he had 17 singles on the Billboard charts, country charts. Six of them were number one. Two of them, two platinum records, two gold records. And then also he was backup singer on From This Moment. With Shania Twain. That was pretty much his biggest moment. But he also won a Grammy, a CMA Horizon Award, ACM Top Male Vocalist. I mean, he definitely was around. Oh, and don't forget, People Magazine named him one of their 50 most beautiful people.
He was one of the beautiful people.
Exactly. He had his, like, heyday. Apparently, he got signed at, like, 20 or something like that. But then right after, around this time, like, his career kind of went down. And his label went under. And the mother, you know, the parent company, which was Warner Brothers, took over his contract and gave him this gig. So it was like right after this that he basically stopped doing anything. And the next time that he kind of came back around was like mid-2000s. And then he just finished a Kickstarter to do a six-song EP. But yeah, and it's available on iTunes if you guys are interested in going checking out. Called Shine.
You know you're not on track when you have to resort to Kickstarter after having formerly been a number one, you know, Billboard charts recording artist.
Yeah.
Things aren't going
for
your way.
Old, if you have to, dang old Warner Brothers.
You have to get $1,000 on Kickstarter to release a new $5 CD.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and I mean, I can understand how it happened. Like, he's, I mean, if you guys really want to go into this guy's story. But I guess he said that because he was really young, he got really depressed when his career went down because he felt like his whole personal worth was in the music business. And so he went through this bout with depression and everything. And so he was dropped from his label, I'm sure, at that point. And then he just decided not to go back with the label, or he just, I don't know. Maybe the label's going a different route. Probably the latter. But yeah, I mean, he's a good singer and everything. I'm really surprised that I missed him entirely. And it took watching this movie and to learn about who he was.
Yeah, well,
now
thanks,
everybody
Warner
knows.
Brothers.
Yes, thanks.
For anyone who's interested, the link will be in the show notes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's not long after this encounter in the woods that they enter dragon country, Dad. Dragons. I see a dragon and I just want to kill it, Dad. But
they're
anyway,
the worst.
The real dragons are cool. They're like, well, kind of bat-like. They had cool. They
that's
had cool,
the problem with this
designs.
Movie is that they separate between like serious characters. Like, the normal dragons were really serious and intense. The normal chickens were just normal looking chickens. And then they have the goofy version of those. There's the goofy dragons, which are the only two goofy talking dragons in the whole place. And the goofy chicken. It's not even like they're from the same world. And that's what's so disappointing.
What's up with the griffin? Why was the griffin talking? Just one more animal.
I was okay with the talking griffin because he was like a scary, he wasn't
that
cartoony.
That was very Rankin Bass.
Yeah. He wasn't cartoony in any way. He was just kind of serious and scary. And it was just like, oh, well, dang, you have a talking griffin. Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah. But it's a talking griffin. Can we keep him? The line, we're the reason why cousins shouldn't marry. Wow. That's the only clearly stated message of this film. And we go with that. My gosh. You know, typical duo, you know, the misfits in a group of creatures or people who have a clear sense of purpose, you know, but they're the misfits and they look nothing like their brothers and sisters, you know, a little interesting having them two headed. But then that was probably just an excuse to fit, you know, a Rosencrantz, Guildenstern, C-3PO, R2-D2 duo.
Yeah, they're conjoined twin dragons, which that's a first.
Oh, boy.
Dragon
Tales had the same thing.
Oh, that's true.
Dragon Tales had the same thing.
During their song, I actually kind of liked when they visualized themselves without their better half, I guess you would say. I was like, ooh, I like your design. But then when they're combined together and one's short and stubby and the other one has this tall, long neck, I'm like, ugh, I don't like you. Go back.
And but, the fact that they have a song in the first place.
Oh, the song is
so many
the
songs.
Worst part of this whole movie. It's
like
all
I'm watching,
over the place.
It's like I'm watching Rankin Bass's Return of the King. The bearer of the ring, the wearer of the ring. Every 5 minutes. And, yeah, one of them is Don Rickles, which I can respect. I always like the short, stubby, sassy one. I always like that one. Balto, I like that dog. You know, there's the trio, there's the tall, sassy dog, and then there's the short, sassy dog, and they don't exactly get along, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, I like the short, stubby one. I'm more of an R2-D2 than a
How does that song go? Never have a da-da-da.
Never keep a good dog down.
You'll never keep a good dragon down.
If
you'll never keep a...
together.
So many
this dragon songs. Will never die.
Oh my gosh. I think that the two things that I'm going to remember most about our Dinos and Dragons series is the Dauntless references and the drunken songs.
We should re-record a compilation of drinking songs from animation. No one. Anyway. Their song is okay.
No.
More is like,
really?
No.
It's
like
bad. It's not good.
It's not good, it's not good.
It's all over the place. It's, you know, what's with the weird pop culture references? Are you the genie? I mean, you get Sonny, Cher.
They even break out Red Hot Riding Hood, that infamous WB animated classic.
If I were Kaylee and Garrett, I would be like, what just happened? Yeah.
Shoot her!
Sorcery. No, like, the thing is,
sorcery.
At the end, she like claps for him. All right, guys, come on.
Don't encourage it.
I'm like, what? That's the transition. They have no better transition from that song to like back to the story than. Slow clap. Get you out
of here. You're onto something with the genie reference. I think they were kind of trying to make it kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
When it just didn't work.
It didn't need to be there, no.
Just didn't work.
So, pop quiz to see how much you were paying attention during the movie. What is the dragon's cardinal rule?
That's easy. Never wear blue shoes with a brown jacket.
Ugh.
Well, never help a human.
Yes, there you go.
Never help a human.
So, all right, you guys paid attention.
That's missed this left side of the dragon to you, you backstabbing murderer.
So going back, we were kind of talking about the song and how goofy and weird it is. I mean, I feel this movie had a lot of potential, but the goofiness really ruins it. It starts getting good, and then something goofy and dorky, and you're taken out of the movie, and you're just kind of rolling your eyes like, why are you doing this? It's really frustrating to watch because there were a lot of parts of this movie that I was interested in. So my question is, why do you think that this is Plague's animation? You know, they start with one idea, but then they have to cram in certain things just because. And they can't really tell the story that they want. So why do, you know, animation directors and filmmakers, why don't they trust in their original story and just keep it more serious? I mean, why are they always forced to dumb it down? And I think I know the answer, but...
Well, I think it goes more than just... I'm sure if the directors and the writers had their way, they would keep their... original vision while they're, and I've been considering what Catmull said in his book about how every story starts off as crap and then it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only if you have pure creativity flowing through that machine. And I think it was, you know, once you get the film execs and you get the studio in, you know, and you got merchandisers to please and stuff like that, then it kind of gets taken out of the hands of the writers and the directors who had this original vision. And I don't think they were trying to dumb it down. I just think they were trying to put too much into it.
Yeah.
And I think this is a perfect example of when you like, when Hollywood steps in and just kind of overdoes what they do to a concept.
I hope that no director/producer goes out thinking consciously, How do I dumb this down?
How do I sell toys off of this?
I really hope that's
at
not...
Wendy's.
Yeah. But I think it's like they had a story. I mean, the production time, from what I remember, was very short. And so I feel like they were just trying to fill it. Fill it as quick as they could. And just, like, it started out as a bad story, but it never had the time to really get out of the bad story spot. It had a good premise. They built the story. And then they didn't have time to fix it. Mm-hmm. And I hope that's what happened.
I can see that. What do you think, Morgan?
Well, not necessarily that why they dumb it down, but I think the problem with this movie is, and why it seems to be dumbed down, is because they were trying to be too many things at once. They were trying to be a musical. They were trying to be an animated film. They were trying to be, you know, goofy and fun, you know, just like Disney movies. They're able to be serious and have these fun, goofy characters. Woohoo! Let's do it too. They were trying to be way too many things at once, and they lost focus of their core. And as a result, the movie just is all over the place and not good.
The core. The core, man.
But it's true. There are so many times when a story will just kind of get lost in itself. Like, you try to add something in to be funny here. You try to add something in to be more, to just kind of please everybody. But yeah, if you lose track of like what the main problem is. I mean, I loved in Ed Catmull's book. We're actually going to be doing a bit more of a fuller on discussion about this. So definitely, if you guys haven't read it, and I'm talking to the listener, because we've all read this, but the listeners out there, if you guys haven't read this book, definitely go pick it up. Head on over to rotoscopers.com/audible, and you can get a free copy to just listen to. In the book, he talks about how the core of the movie kind of gets lost with some directors. And they have what they call the brain trust to kind of like push them together and help them move forward and do all these things to be able to keep the main problems under control. Like, for example, when they did Toy Story 2, it was horrible, horrendous storyline. And it took them, you know, it took a whole bunch of stuff, changes. The one problem that they decided to hold on to was the fact that Woody had to make the decision of, am I going to hold on to safety and not get hurt by going to the toy collector? Or am I going to risk heartbreak and, you know, being
utter destruction?
But yeah, by going back home to a child who may forget about him in a couple of years. And you know, that was that key moment where they were able to find that. They placed specific moments where they introduced that problem and it built upon that problem to the end. It was the moment that was like, oh, Woody's on the horse and he's like, I know, or no, he's not on the horse, where he's like, he talks to Stinky Pete, where he's like, yes, he may, you know, he may grow out of me, but I wouldn't miss it for the world. And it's those moments that kind of pushes the whole plot, holds it together. And it didn't have the glue of a problem that really resonated with anybody. It was just kind of throw a story together.
Yep. Yep. So, Mom is still stuck in the covered wagon.
Aw, Ma. Why did they capture her again? I feel I missed this.
I don't know.
At first I was like, the villain wanted to marry her, but then it wasn't until after the movie was over that I was like, oh, it's because she was always welcomed at the castle and so she could get in. And I was like, oh, but it took me after the whole freaking movie to remember that. I was like,
the bad guy used to be welcome at the castle. Why didn't he get all his buddies in first, sneak them in, because he's always welcome, and then turn on them?
Chinese float.
Oh, gosh, Trojan horse, come on.
Is the mother normally carry this much baggage around with her? She's got like 12 wagons as she's coming in, and it's just her driving. I thought that was funny.
Well,
what's in there? Cliff bars. I love those things.
Garrett begins to die. And then there's
the obligatory love interest gets wounded.
Mm-hmm. So they find a cave. Miraculously healed because the magical healing plant just happens to be right there. Right there.
Oh my gosh.
So let's, you know, now that you're healed, it's a perfect time for a song.
Perfect time for a song. He can barely get up, but boy howdy can he belt those notes.
Not bad of a song, but it was really a good song. No. So, all right, let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
Final battle.
I love how there's the typical bad guy just stands there while a large, easily avoidable wooden beam comes swinging towards him. Usually after some pithy line by the protagonist, you know, he's like looming over the guy he's going to kill. He's like, you know, you will be destroyed. And then he hears a voice behind him. Not quite, you know, and then if you snap your fingers in 1 second cadence, it takes him about 5 seconds for the dang wooden beam to hit him. And in that time, he's just standing there like, you know, and gosh, that's like a movie plot device that needs a stop. Did you ever see, I don't want to go into a tangent, but they do that way too many times. Like someone's about to die. They turn around and there's a protagonist. Dun, 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 you know, and they swing around a thing a couple of times. Then they hit him out of a window.
Hey.
You know, it makes for great Hollywood, but it's like during that time, Ruber could have just sliced everyone by that point. But anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's the final showdown.
Yeah, he's just stumbling around. My God.
Hey, he just got hit by a wooden beam. By now, he's getting a little winded, you know?
You know, this is supposed to be the big part of the movie, but I lost interest right before this. Right before this point, I'm like, okay, let's just get done.
Right.
You know, where you start checking your phone and Twitter too much, and so you kind of miss parts of the movie.
Yeah, it's the final battle.
So next thing you know, boom, a marriage.
Well, literally boom. There's the obligatory Hollywood adventure film giant explosion and subsequent cleansing of evil.
Yeah, I think that we should really add that one to the crazy villain deaths video that we're going to be doing.
Oh, yeah.
Because that one was...
He kind of gets melted.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
There's like, this is like the third one that I've seen that I know off the top of my head that end with the villain like disintegrating. You have off of Tangled here, and then also the one we did last time, even though he didn't really.
Rasputin.
Yeah.
Was he disintegrated, or did he just get thrust back down into the pit?
Well, he rattles into bones and then he turns.
Oh, yeah,
into
man.
And then he blows
cool.
away in the wind.
Ugh. That
His
was
ashes
cool.
were scattered Ugh. Across Paris.
Oh, he's in my mouth.
Yeah, well, stay tuned for that. Chelsea has some pretty good ones up her sleeve.
You know, and then we have the marriage, but it's not a marriage. She's just getting knighted, but she just happens to be wearing a wedding gown.
Oh, did they two in one. Her? We can only book Arthur once.
Yeah. Everything's perfect now. Well, you got everything you wanted. Well, not everything. Woo!
It was the 90s. There
but you're
go.
Still, but you're still blind. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Well, hey, Marilyn, can you do something? Oh, no, I'm just an advisor. This is just an advisory position. I'm not really an advisor.
He had nothing to do during the entire movie anyway.
Did the bad guys turn back to people?
Yeah.
They turned back into Huns.
Okay. See, again,
very
with the
awkward
texting.
Looking thing.
They turned back into good animals, like on Robin Hood.
Okay, right before we rate this. If you were to remake this movie, since I'm not quite sure we had that many good things to say, what would you change?
Like I've mentioned before, synopsis was good. The major characters were good. I like at least human ones. And the Hawk. The Hawk was cool. I would have changed the voice actors. I wasn't a fan of the corny jokes. And I would totally redo the music. And like I said, I would either take the prayer out and put it in a different movie, or I would change the whole vibe of this movie altogether, and I would make it more of a serious tone, maybe based on an Italian opera where everyone dies at the end. Hey, I want tears, okay?
You're going to break their hearts.
But, I mean, that's what the song The Prayer begs for. That's in my head. But, I mean, it just depends on what you're going for. I felt like they had the choice of either keeping the storyline or going with the prayer, and they tried to do them both, and it didn't work out. So that's what I would have done.
Very good, very good. So here's my happy, fun 5-step plan to improve Quest for Camelot, or Camelo, as they said in the beginning. Step one, make a different movie. Step two, if studio ignores step one, make a commitment to either a serious film or a wacky film. Don't try to cram it all into one hour and 20 minutes. Three, a better villain. I really think that Ruber was pathetic. I think if they had given all the characters a more clear motivation and interpreted that motivation a little bit better, then I would have been a little more invested into this film. Like, you know, why is Ruber after want to take over the kingdom? You know what I would have done? I would have rewritten him to be Lancelot, and it would have been more of a Mufasa Scar relationship, to where they were brothers in arms once, and Lancelot, who historically was King Arthur's rival throughout much of the lore, and make him just lose his stuff, and then make it a very tragic relationship between him and Arthur. Also, kill off Arthur. There needs to be high stakes. Number four. Hey, sorry, it's Hollywood, sweetheart. It's hard. Step four, hire competent editors. There was literally a 2-second scene that just snapped to Ruben in front of a fire going, "I will get those kids." And then that was it. It had some of the most random cuts to things, and it was not cohesive. And I'm usually not a plot and writing guy, but my gosh, it was pretty much in your face. So hire some better editors. And at step five, if you made it to this step, please go back to step one and reconsider that. I know this sounds really mean, and these recent episodes, like, oh gosh, these listener polls are just bringing out the worst in me. But the concept was kind of doomed from the start, don't you think? Like, it did have potential, did have cool parts, but you have a Hollywood studio 3 years after the dawn of CG animation, and they've got money. They attempt to make a 2D animated film, and they risk their time and money riding on the fame of the Disney Renaissance. And since it was Warner Brothers, you know, they're pretty much begging Hollywood to come in and make the film big and loud. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Cats Don't Dance. And the whole thing was just this mess. And it is tragic, because they had cool things. They did have the cool stuff with, like, the blind protagonist, you know, and how he struggles. And they had some cool stuff that they could have done. Really cool creatures. Like, I thought everything besides the two-headed dragon was cool looking. Might have been decent if there was, like, decent writing and editing, but tries to be dramatic, like, seconds after a silly, goofy scene. I'm not invested in the main character. You have these typical Hollywood stereotypes, and I'm done. The film was just a mess, even though it had these kind of fascinating parts where it showed real potential. They should make a documentary on why this failed.
Call it Kingdom of the Camelot.
Kingdom of the Camelot.
Okay, so we asked our Twitter followers the same exact question. We asked, what changes would you have made to make Quest for Camelot better? And Jacqueline Cullen says, the over-the-top silliness of the henchmen / sidekicks didn't fit the rest of the movie very well. I'd tone that down. Rainbow Dash says, to be honest, I wouldn't do anything. I love it in its cheesy Celine Dion-coded loveliness. Nice.
Okay.
Trish says, Jiminy Crickets, where do I start? Axe, the goofy sidekicks.
Trish, you're a genius.
Make the male lead less emo. Oh. Make the villains less...
ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Give King Arthur and crew something to do, for crying out loud, and make the heroine more awesome.
I like Trish.
You're awesome.
Trish, you're amazing. That was great.
Whitney Grace, who is the host of the Animation Interviews podcast, says, no singing and less annoying two-headed dragon. August says, no singing, no male lead, no goofy sidekicks, just an adventure of retrieving Excalibur after being lost. That's true. Why'd she need a guy? And then lastly, our writer Mark Brown says, I'd give Merlin more involvement in the plot and more lines. I mean, come on, how do you not appreciate John G?
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
G-I-E-L-G-U-D. I clearly don't appreciate it either. Oh, I'd also like to have the griffin say, well, of course not. Don't be ridiculous. All right. So that's that. What would you rate it on that note?
2 stars for the above-mentioned reasons.
Okay, done. I will give it 2.5 stars. I was going into this expecting the worst and was decently surprised at times, which made it even more disappointing because I could see the snippets of potential greatness here and I could see parts that I actually enjoyed and I like. I love a good medieval film. I think, you know, it's a fascinating time period. You had so much wealth of, you know, story that you could have got worked off with, the legend of Excalibur and King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. There was so much there that they could have done, and it just was this weird, goofy musical that just didn't believe in itself, and 2.5 stars.
I wanted so bad to give this 3 stars. I really did, but I couldn't do it. So I gave it 2.5. For all of my, you know, reasons that I've already mentioned.
Yep.
Neat. So if you have an opinion about this film, be sure to send us an email at contact@rotoscopers.com or a voicemail, and we will play your review on our next episode.
Hey, voicemails are so cool. You get to record your voice and hear yourself on the podcast. It's awesome.
Yes. Our first voicemail is from Jacqueline Cullen.
Hey, Rotoscopers. Jacqueline here. I hope you guys are having a good wrap-up to summer. I know you're filming the Quest for Camelot episode coming up, so I wanted to chime in with my thoughts. I remember as a kid really enjoying this film. I think we had it on VHS, and I got some of the toys from, like, McDonald's or something like that. And when I pulled up some of the songs on YouTube, I definitely remembered, like, Through My Father's Eyes and, like, On My Father's Wings, I mean, and Looking Through Your Eyes and I Stand Alone. Like, some of those songs were just, like, very memorable. Looking back, I guess. It's not like I sing them all the time or anything. But in general, this film just does not hold up. I know that it was from Warner Brothers Animation, which just in general had like a very rough go of it. And it was in 1998. So it was kind of that transitional period between primarily hand-drawn and primarily CGI films. And that definitely shows, like for instance, The Rock Ogre just sticks out so badly compared to the rest of the film. And there were just, I think a lot of the issues in production really show through in this film. There were a number of writers and the tone is just all over the place. That Ruber's like villain song is just so laughable. It's just such a, it's like almost a parody of Be Prepared from The Lion King, even down to like the green lighting. And it's just, it's not so great and it doesn't hold up so well. There was definitely a little bit of nostalgia factor in rewatching it. But other than that, I don't really think this will be a repeat viewing for me. But yeah, I can't wait to hear what you guys thought of it as well. Since I know specifically that Morgan was seeing this for the first time. Great. All right. Talk to you later. Bye guys.
Okay. So I completely agree with Jacqueline. I love that she had nostalgia with this movie. Cause that's one thing, no matter how bad a movie is growing up, if you grow up watching it, you love it. But I agree with her points that it just was trying too hard. And, yeah, I mean, she was talking about the songs and there were good songs as singles or on their own. Mm-hmm. They just didn't work in this movie. And okay. So for any of you who don't know Jacqueline or don't follow Jacqueline, Jacqueline is the coolest.
She's
at Jacqueline Cullen on Twitter and she went to San Diego Comic-Con and she dressed up as Honey Lemon. So, for the record, I think that's the first Honey Lemon ever cosplay. Then she also was Anna and some other characters, but her cosplay is awesome. She's really talented. She made this really awesome. I'm saying awesome a lot. She's making this incredible Honey Lemon fighting costume. So check it out. I'll include pictures. And she's super cool because she bought a Rotoscopers t-shirt and took a picture.
She totally did.
Woo! Now,
what was really funny though, like, you know how a lot of people during the Twilight era, like everyone was like, oh, my name is this Cullen. Like they would always just put their name in there. And then her actual last name is Cullen. So I was like, that is cool. Okay.
Good deal.
Side note thing.
Yeah. I really like her point about how, Ruber's song was just kind of like a cheap parody of Be Prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have a few pieces of mailbag. We have two reviews for Quest for Camelot, so I am going to read the first one from Vichelle. Hi, Rotoscopers. Love your podcast. Quest for Camelot. I was quite excited when you guys selected this film. It's one that I love and hate, so I had to write in a review. It's fun to watch, but what really frustrates me is that this film had so much lost potential. Apparently there were major issues with management and production of this film, leading to a short production cycle, just 1 year, according to the producer. Unhappy animators and a not-so-polished product. It's a shame. I guess that explains why so much of the animation, when compared to other movies of its time, is subpar. But there are many good sequences where the time spent on the animation really shows, and the occasional use of CGI wasn't too jarring until that final ogre sequence. Yeah, this is the third time that's been mentioned. The setting and characters had so much potential, and the story arc could have been better. But despite the predictability and the little drawn-out story, didn't need that ogre arc at all. That's four. The characters were interesting. Having a strong female protagonist and a blind male protagonist was an interesting twist that they handled well. Very promising, and I guess I expected something more. And of course, who can't forget the lovable animal sidekicks? I really like the juxtaposition of the falcon and the griffin. The two-headed dragon and his slash their hilarious moments also shine. Could have done without Blade Beak the chicken, though. Oh, gosh. Between Garrett and Devin slash Cornwall, the theme of acceptance really stood out. But I think most of all with this film, the music stands out to me. In fact, the prayer sung by Celine Dion even went up against the Prince of Egypt's When You Believe for an Oscar. I Stand Alone and Looking Through Your Eyes are also favorites of mine. Even the background Celtic music to the title sequence is amazing. All in all, Quest for Camelot had its good moments amidst a rather mediocre movie. While it had the potential to be so much more in terms of both story and animation, I still enjoyed it. A 3.5 out of 5 for me. Can't wait to hear what you have to say about it. Cheers, Vishal. You can find him at V-E-T Cartoonist.
Huh. On Twitter. Well, surprisingly optimistic about the film. That just makes me feel like a jerk, but I guess I just don't have that nostalgia factor to forgive the imperfections of this film.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm becoming one of those jaded animation snobs.
No, definitely the first time I watched this, I wasn't nearly as jaded as I am today. And I just remember thinking, like, I guess that was cool. I didn't really have that much to, like, go off of afterward. But, yeah, I'm sorry I've become jaded, people.
I liked his... We didn't really talk about the themes in this movie, but the theme of acceptance was something that I didn't actually pay attention to, and I feel really embarrassed.
Yeah, there's that. There's this, like, semi-heartwarming sequence where the dragon starts flying because they are consumed by their love for Kaylee, you know?
They finally agree on something.
Ah, brothers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, our next one is from an old favorite, Joshua Kay.
Oh,
hi, Rotoscopers. Quest for Camelot is one of those 1990s movies which were trying to be Disney because everyone except Pixar and DreamWorks was doing an animated musical trying to be something like The Little Mermaid. And this, from what I've seen, is bad. They have the typical hero, typical princess, typical goofy sidekick, making it a musical, and a typical and oblivious villain. The only thing I like is the animation. It looks good sometimes, and I like some of the voice acting. And it has something that I like sometimes and sometimes hate in animated movies, pop culture. They even make a Lion King parody in one of the songs, If I Didn't Have You. So far, this movie looks bland, but I can't wait for your review. Also, I have a question. What are you guys' favorite non-Disney 1990s animated movies? And yes, you can do Pixar. Joshua K.
Well, obviously Toy Story from that era.
I feel like including Pixar isn't fair.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, at the time, they weren't together-ish.
Toy Story 2.
Yeah, Toy Story 2 was good.
So good.
I'm going to go with Prince of Egypt. I mean, Toy Story 2 was awesome too, but
I loved Prince of Egypt, and I also loved Space Jam. That was my brother's and my jam. We would watch that. Spit Shine! Oh, it's a good one.
I don't think I watched the whole thing.
Oh, Chelsea.
That was one that I didn't ever get.
Well, you didn't play basketball either, but.
Yeah, true.
It's okay. Michael Jordan. Charles Barkley.
I know.
Bugsy Bogues.
Barkley was the man.
We love Barkley over here.
Let's see. 1990s, definitely Prince of Egypt and Anastasia.
I like it. Cool.
Hey, Rotoscopers. Dan here. Liked your review about 101 Dalmatians, but here's something that I thought you would find suspicious. Do you know that Anita looks like Julie Andrews? Dan.
Anita, darling.
Anita. I did not know that, but yeah.
I mean, I guess she kind of... I don't know.
It's a coincidence, I think. To the Rotoscopers, I've been a big fan of your podcast, website, and YouTube channel for at least a year now, and it all began with me trying to find a good podcast on iTunes that talked about the Prince of Egypt. So I'll say thanks to Prince of Egypt, I have found a podcast to love and follow. I recently listened to your 101 Dalmatians podcast, and it definitely brought back some memories for me. I, like many others, watched it numerous times, and my favorite character probably would either be Pongo or Roger. It is definitely a movie that is rewatchable to the end. I have definitely enjoyed many of your podcast episodes and YouTube videos, and I appreciate that it is done by three very professional podcasters. I must say, I am a big fan of Chelsea's singing, especially her When You Believe, which is flawless, beautiful, and from the heart. Before I sign off this email, I'll add one more thing that you might be interested to know. This year, for the past 2 months, I have been working on an art gallery project inspired by Disney for the Fringe Festival project in my hometown, New Zealand. It's basically the entire chronology of the Disney animated films, going from Snow White on up to Frozen, but with photography. In short, each title would be three photographs associated with it. For example, Frozen has a snow theme. That is, mountains capped with snow, a snowman, and a frozen heart. Utilizing a decorative glass heart I have and photographing it in the snow. And The Little Mermaid has photos associated with the sea and music, the latter as a reference to Sebastian, naturally. I'm really hoping that I can get it off the ground and successfully finish it in time for next year. 53 is a lot of films to cover. The art gallery already has the title, Snowflakes in Glass Slippers, which came to mind not long after I'd first come up with the idea for the project. If I were to give you suggestions on a future episode or video review, what about reviewing the director's commentaries of the animated films that have them? I know that the Blu-ray of The Lion King apparently does, as does The Prince of Egypt and Brave. I'm one of those who actually enjoys listening to the director's commentary after I've watched the film a few times, of course, and I always seem to learn something new from them. And for the most part, they can be pretty enjoyable, especially when they start joking around with each other. Once again, keep up the fantastic, top-notch work, Rotoscopers. Yours sincerely, Holly Meyer from New Zealand.
Holly, thank you so much for saying that. That really means a lot to me. Yeah, I love doing that song. It's one of my favorite songs, and I'm so glad that it's, you know, Prince of Egypt, you're a big fan of that too. Like, we're big Prince of Egypt fans over here. but yeah, no, thank you really a lot. And that photo gallery sounds really cool. When you get it all done and everything, make sure to send it to us so that we can add that link to the show notes to this episode so everybody can take a look at it.
Yeah, yes, definitely send us a link. And thank you so much for your kind words on the work that we do on the podcast and the YouTube videos. Professional podcasters, I like the sound of that. And as far as reviewing like director's commentaries, I definitely need to start turning those on when I watch animated movies.
Yeah, you do.
Because then I would definitely discuss them more on the episodes.
I think it's hard to do a review of just the director's commentary because they're talking about the movie, so it's kind of a review of the movie as well. And I think what we need to be doing is being better prepared. I mean, we do prepare in our own ways by watching the movie, but by one of us at least watching the director's commentary, because there's so much wealth and knowledge that can be learned from that. And so I think that's what we should try to do in future episodes. Like, if one of us have the DVD and we can watch the director's commentary, we should. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I mean, the discussion and the things that you learn about production, there's just so much more than reading it various places on the internet.
It's true.
Yeah.
Hi, Chelsea, Morgan, and Mason. It's Phoebe from Australia again. I was watching one of my favorite DreamWorks films the other day and realized you hadn't done a podcast on it yet. That film is The Road to El Dorado. This movie always manages to crack me up, and I've loved it ever since my dad first showed me this film when I was younger. The music and the scenery of this film is gorgeous and beautiful. The comedic one-liners and the dark history of this ancient yet mysterious civilization come together in this amazing film. If I had to give it a rating, I would give it 5 out of 5 stars, as it's just a movie that I love so much. Lots of love from Australia, Phoebe.
Whoa, Phoebe, 5-star review. I remember watching it one time, but yeah, I would love to throw that in there. So we'll definitely look into Road to El Dorado on a upcoming episode.
Yeah.
Dear Rotoscopers, I'm a big fan of your podcast, and I'm writing to you for the first time all the way from London. Then again, with the internet, it's not like it's that hard. I love your podcast, and I'm also a massive fan of anime, so your Spirited and Mononoke talks were such a great surprise. I would love if you guys could do one for Wolf Children. While it isn't as well known as the Ghiblis, it is by the great Mamoru Hosoda of Summer Wars fame. This is my favorite anime film of all time. It is so moving, I bet it would even make Mason cry. To me, every minute is just perfect, except for that one scene, but you'll have to watch to find out. Your faithful listener, Karifa.
Karifa, thank you so much for the recommendation. I mean, we are not so much anime aficionados, so it's really nice that we have fantastic fans who, you know, are able to feed us anime that we can handle as we get
Oh, please.
At least me. Like, it's hard for me to, like, really accept a lot of anime just because I grew up with, like, this stigma around it, I think. But yeah. Now that I've started watching a few more of the really high quality things, I've definitely had a bigger appreciation for it. So thank you so much for your recommendations. We will definitely look into those.
And one thing that I will be doing, the Sailor Moon Crystal has come out and we're on episode 4. So, and now there's a 3-week gap in between episodes, just horrible. I'm gonna go back to episode 1 and then do a review of every single episode. I know I'm a little late to the game, but at least I can catch up to episode 4 and then I'm gonna plan on doing new episode reviews, every new episode.
We definitely need to do more anime, and we have a lot of fans and listeners who ask us to do anime, and I don't know. I guess there's just so much of it that it's hard for us to find stuff that we can actually review on the site. And also look at Wolf Children. I cry doing movies all the time. Heck, Grave of the Fireflies was, golly, too much. And then I got super emotional during Princess Mononoke. And but, like, I don't know. I watch my fair share of anime. Like, I watched, like, Achi and Shippak over the summer and stuff like that, and Attack on Titan, but that's kind of stuff you can't exactly review on this type of site that we have going.
Yeah.
But we definitely need to start thinking about doing some anime. I wouldn't mind doing it.
All right. If you have an email or voicemail that you want to send in, be sure to email us at contact@rotoscopers.com or voicemails, rotoscopers.com/voicemails with an S.
If you have listened this far, you have reached, sadly, the end of the episode on Quest for Camelot. So let us know on your social media outlet of choice that you have made it through this episode by using the hashtag AnimeAddicts75. This is our 75th episode. My goodness. Thanks for sticking with us, folks. You can always go to rotoscopers.com/75. That will be the page for this episode. And there you will find the show notes. And also, you know, a way to stream this episode. We're also available on iTunes, Hypeable, and Animated Views, also available on Stitcher Radio. And hey, if you love this show, if you love the Rotoscopers, please leave feedback and reviews on iTunes or, you know, on the site. We really appreciate your feedback, and it really helps to know what our listeners think. You can email us at contact@rotoscopers.com. You can also drop us a line through our amazing voicemail system, rotoscopers.com/voicemail. You can also call 406-646-6575. Again, this episode is brought to you by Amazon and Audible. Amazon is your online source for everything. Audible is your online source for everything Audible that you can download. And also t-shirts, folks, Rotoscopers t-shirts. And if you go to rotoscopers.com/store, you can order your very own Rotoscopers t-shirt. So rotoscopers.com/store. Get them before they're gone. Also, a little announcement. Next episode is Chelsea's birthday episode. And our final dragons and, what is it? Dragons.
Dinos.
And, yeah.
Dinos and dragons.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And our final Dinos and Dragons film, Sleeping Beauty. Oh, such a refreshing thing to look forward to after we're back. We're back after Quest for Camelot.
Lesson anyway. Learned, don't do movies that focus on dinosaurs or dragons, unless you're Sleeping Beauty or How to Train
and
Your Dragon.
And don't do drugs.
That too.
Yeah. Anyway. So I am Mason Smith, your amazing host, and you can find me at Mason, SMTX, on Twitter. Check out my online portfolio, masonsmithportfolio.com. And once again, I'm here with my lovely co-host, Morgan Stradling, who you can find at Morgan Stradling on Twitter. And also Chelsea Robson at Chelsea Robson on Twitter. And also ChelseaRobson.com is her Facebook. You can check out all her amazing singing videos that are the talk of the town, the talk of Nashville.
What?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all we have to say.
And there it is. So once again, thank you so much for listening. We love you guys. Until next time.
Somos los rotoscoperos.
Hey, how did we know to do that? Ich bin die Rotoscopen.
All right, let's get this party started.
Let's get this party started.
Let's get it started in here.
The theme song of every youth conference ever.
Oh my gosh, it's true.
What's his name? Rancor Ruben? Man, I'm hungry.
But yeah, this is a really great one. And in it, it goes and it talks about... crap, no, I forgot what I was talking about.
That's all right, we'll edit it.
I know, but what was I talking about?
Oh, we're talking about how much the movie sucks. Jeez, sorry.
So back to the mother.
No, but Ed Catmull talks about something.
Movies?
Core?
Oh, the core.
The core. Rated R.
Okay, so we have That Is the Question, Draw That Axe in a Chicken Suit, and The Core.
I like Draw That Axe in a Chicken Suit.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Should Mason do it because he's good at the voice? I think so.
Aw, I sure am. Dude, I just recorded Beavis and Butthead voices on my video.
Awesome.
Sounds so good.